Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between while you watch.
Hi, John.
Hey, Jesse.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
What are we doing today?
We're talking about client-server synchronization now that it almost pretty much works.
Great. Okay, let's do that. Let's bring up who is that phone and take a look at the client and how it synchronizes data with the server. All right. And what we're doing in the repository is that we are saving to a Sterling database. And then we want the ability to synchronize with the database on the server.
Right, so you've got a local copy. It doesn't matter if you're offline. You can still use your contact list. You can add new contacts, and then we sync those over to the server. And I think you set that up for two different scenarios, right?
At the moment, it is set up with – well, what are you referring to with two different scenarios?
It saves immediately if you're connected or if you're not connected, it'll detect that later.
Yes, we've added the – when you're not connected and then you become connected, we detect that and then we call synchronize with server at that time. So it begins, the synchronization begins in synchronize with server. And that you can see on line 52. And the first thing we do on line 55 is we do a query against our local in-memory collection called people. And we look for a flag not yet on server being set to true. If that flag is set to true, we add that person to a new collection called people who need to be added to server. And if we don't have anybody who needs to be added to server, we're done. Synchronization was a huge success. But if we do have anybody who needs to be added, then coming down to line 62, we're going to go ahead and set up to an asynchronous event to go and get the collection from the server.
And right. So and that's so we know our list of people we think need to be added to the server, and so we need to grab that new list from the server and merge the two together or and pass that list back up to it.
Exactly. Yeah, append the people who need to be added and then pass it back up to the server. So that calls asynchronously to the method updated server list load completed. And you can see that down here. We check to see if there's an error. If so, we're done. But otherwise, and we assume there's not, we're going to iterate through the list of people who need to be added to the server and iterate through the list of people who need to be added to the server. And for each person in that list, we're going to add to the collection we got back from the server.
Mm-hmm. And that's partly because we have slightly different models on the client and the server. The client has some specific things like a client assigned ID and there are different IDs. There's also different there's that flag whether or not somebody needs to be submitted to the server, which makes sense on the client but not on the server. So this is just kind of a left side, right side mapping exercise there.
Exactly. And then once we have populated the list that needs to go back to the server, we call begin save changes, which is yet another asynchronous call. And we'll talk in a little while about an alternative way of doing this with reactive extensions. But right now we're doing it in the traditional way. So we call begin save changes, and we pass in our async callback, which is changes synchronized with server completed. So we can go to changes synchronized with server completed, go to the definition of that. And when that happens, we know that it's been updated on the server. If we come back here, then we have completed updating those people on the server, and we want to set that not yet on server flag to false. Now, This is a fail-safe mechanism because in the worst case, we would just add them again, and if we're doing it right on the server, what will happen is it would just be an update with no change.
Right.
So there'd be no harm done.
So what you pointed out here is because of the whole asynchronous model that you've got in Silverlight and Windows Phone, there's a lot of do something, wait for a call back, and then keep going. And so part of, you know, along the way we struggled with these method names, these events have really long names, and that's partly just to keep straight in our head, okay, what's going on now? What's the current state?
Right. And we even, against my religion, we did add commenting in, and it's against my religion because I think that the code ought to be written in a way that it's readable enough without comments, but keeping straight the sequence for synchronization, you can see that we have step one, get the latest from the server, then down here, step two, merge the lists, then down here, save to server, step three, and finally step four, update the flags. And that's to keep that sequencing clear because we're moving from method to method because of the callbacks. And once again, that cries out for the alternative of reactive extensions.
I think, too, you know, this is something we're both familiar with. It's easy enough to have a call with a callback and debug that and figure out, okay, well, we expected this and this didn't happen. And then, like you're saying, we both would be happier to look at this code later if it's using reactive extensions and using a more clear, you know, easier to read the flow than saying, okay, now this method calls into this and this callback does it.
So that, right. That is, in fact, the entire synchronization, except for the part that you mentioned, which is when there is a change from being offline to being online. Let's go down to synchronize with server. We want to do this work when we save to the local repository. We also want to do this if we're offline and then we go online and there are any backed up local new records that need to be synchronized with the server. So we can figure out where we actually call this by right-clicking and saying find all references. And what we see is that it's in personal repository at line 127, and that makes sense because that's under save. So we call synchronize with server when we're saving.
So when we save a new contact, immediately then we try and synchronize them.
Exactly.
If not, they're saved locally and they're in this queue that gets synchronized at the next opportunity.
Exactly. And the way that you see that is by going to mainpage.xaml.cs. Let's just go there. And what you see is we have this handler for network address changed. And we look at that change and see if get is network available is true. That is, if we are now connected. And in that case, we can call synchronize with server through the static repository.
Yep. And the exact same flow happens. We check through the list. We see who we have locally that still needs to be pushed up to the server, and we send them up. One thing here that's obvious is we're only doing kind of a one-way sync. We're only, the master list is assumed to always be on the phone and never with updates on the server. And I think we've talked about, you know, given time, if we keep working through this, that we may want to be able to with multiple devices, or you go directly on your browser and edit somebody. And so the synchronization logic would be more of a merge as opposed to an append.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that I did implement locally to get started down that path was that when you get your search results now, you get, as you did before, a list of the people who match. But then if you click on that person, you're brought back into that same UI that we use both for entering and for searching with all the fields filled out that we know about that person. You can then make changes and hit save, and that will save locally. And we just need to complete the loop and get that update up to the server. But we're about 80% of the way there to be able to do on-phone editing of existing contacts.
Great. So before hopping over the server, which I think we need to do pretty much now, but the places where we're actually doing that synchronization is we're saying context dot, you know, people, and so we're working with that data service context, and that was the proxy that we generated based on the WCF service previously, right?
That's correct. That's exactly right. And you can see that by going to the synchronize with server, and you immediately see that right here.
Okay. So can you open up the server and I'll
I can do
walk
that.
Through that code?
I have the technology. Let's open up a new copy of Visual Studio. And let me give you control. It's all yours.
Okay, excellent. So the first thing we'll do is I want to just remind everyone, including myself, about this API system. So the idea is that when you register on the phone, you log in with Facebook, and immediately before trying, it's going to check locally and say, do I have an API key on the server? If not, it calls into the server, and it calls into this register method. The register method takes your Facebook username, and it also takes your live ID hash, which indicates the device. And so based on those two things, then we assign you an API key and send it back to you. I've added in a little logic here since we last kind of skimmed over this, which says if you've already registered with this exact same information, we're not going to give you a new API key. We'll just send you back the original one. So that's this code here. So given that, we assign you an API key, and that's stored on the phone then for the next time you call. So then it's time to actually make requests to get the list of contacts and to save changes back up to the server. So we'll look at first the happy case, and then we'll look at some of the troubleshooting I had to do later. So we've got this query interceptor here, and the idea is that we say there's some code in there I should delete instead of just comment. But what we say is if somebody's making a query for people, then this interceptor jumps in and says, filter that down so that it only matches based on the API key. And the API key is sent as part of the request. So that's actually something we looked previously in our first searches on API key implementations. People said, oh yeah, great, just do this using a query string. And when we tried to do that, the phone client said, I'm not going to do that. You need to pass it in a header. And thinking about it in more detail, that's better anyways, because you know authentication, you don't want to just be sending a bunch of stuff in your query strings. That's a lot more obvious to other people. So I made it.
Let me stop you there and take you back. Just go right where you were.
Yeah.
With that attributed. The query interceptor is a attribute of what framework?
WCF. This query interceptor, this is happening inside our data service. So this is a WCF data service. And so that's able to say a data service supports this query interceptor system.
Great.
So, which is pretty handy. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, it's kind of magic and you have to know exactly which magic thing you've got to do to make it work. But you saw there it was, you know, two lines of code to say, okay, before returning the query, do this. And so in reality, I think of this as it's kind of creating a custom service just for me as a user. So for me on the phone, I don't need to say, do any filtering or whatever. I just say, here's my API key. I want all the users, and it's going to give me all my users. So then this API key authentication system, we looked at before, when you're making a query, it's going to say, do they have an API key? So let me find this. This is checking for, good. It's checking for an API key. All this stuff we actually looked at in a previous episode a few back, where we just say parse it out of the query string, and then we're going to validate that it's in our database and what user it belongs to. We added in a few lines of code here that says if we tried to find it in the query string and it didn't work, pull it out of the headers. And can we hop? Is it easy enough for me to hop over into the phone?
Sure.
Can you take a look at that? That was something I did behind your back when you weren't looking, is I made this change so that we're not just good. So here when we're calling in, we're actually appending this header. So I think that is in this person repository. See this right here. So on context sending request, we say e.requestheaders API key equals this API key. So that's all we had to do there. And then switch back to the phone again.
Not to the phone, to the server.
Right. So that's pretty much it. Your request, when the phone says, I need contacts, magically kind of behind the scenes, it says, on sending request, append the API key. You didn't have to worry about that throughout your repository. It just was happening. The context knows to do that. So then when it sends a request, it appends the API key. The API authorization stuff fires and validates that it's, you know, that it is valid. The service itself has these query interceptors that are going to say, you know, based on the person or user queries, you know, get that information or filter it by that, and returns it back. So as far as the server synchronization stuff, it really doesn't need to do anything additional in order to do any other saving. It just says, here's my list of people, save them. One thing that is kind of interesting as a follow-on, we've kind of walked through all the, you know, here's all this great code that all works, or semi-great code that all works. But along the way, it didn't work. And we were pulling our hair out, or if I'd had hair, I would have been pulling it out. And I actually was talking about, like, we need to jump off of this WCF thing because I can't figure out what's going on. And after you talked me off the ledge, I realized, you know, that the information is available. I just need to know where to look for it. So there are two places where I can kind of get under the hood. One is that WCF4 includes this processing pipeline. So there are events on this processing pipeline. So all I needed to do on this was I could say processing pipeline. So on the service itself, I say processing pipeline. I add events for processing change set and process change set. And I could take this out now or put a pragma in or whatever to remove it. But this was a hook where I could say, okay, this actually did fire on the service, and what's going wrong? And then the other thing that I really should have thought more about earlier was the idea of this handle exception. So handle exception is a method I can override on my service, and I can just say, you know, when an exception fires, I want to set a breakpoint here and figure out what went wrong. And what was going wrong in this case was I was trying to save that our model indicated that a person or you know, so on the phone we create a list of people, which are all my contacts, and I'm a user of the system. And so there's this foreign key mapping between users and the people in their contact list, and those foreign keys weren't set up right. So I kind of looked back at how that mapping was done and changed it on both the phone and the server so that would work more simply. So I kind of sidestepped the problem by changing our models a little bit.
But key to what you were saying, and I don't want to lose sight of it, is by having handle exception here, you had a place you could put a breakpoint and find out why is this failing. Whereas before that, it was just failing in a way that seemed like we couldn't grab that problem.
Exactly, and it can get really tricky when you've got all these moving parts. You've got the phone repository talking to a proxy on the phone, which is then going through, it's making a call, so maybe something's going wrong on that call, and that call's going to a WCF service, and there's all these kind of interceptors and authentication, so maybe something's wrong there, and then it's calling into Entity Framework, and that's going through code first, and so there's some, you know, mapping and convention things that are happening there. So there are a lot of places along the way that something could go wrong. And this handle exception is actually where I saw that breakpoint and it said, wait a minute, you know, this foreign key constraint is not satisfied. So
another place that we had a problem, are we ready to talk about problems on the client at this point?
Sure.
Okay, so the key place that I remember that we had a significant problem and was befuddling was that you would put in the client's first name and you would put in the client's last name, and we could see that they were both being entered and both being received, and yet we were not getting the last name. And that was an artifact of the fact that when you entered the last name and then clicked on the save button, the last name was not, property was not being updated because you hadn't left the field yet. And so that was not getting put into the repository and was being lost.
Let's look at that code.
So that's in create contact viewmodel.cs. I love it when you double click and that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I don't know, does it take a while for the phone to spin up? I think it might make more sense to actually see, you know, fill in one and show what's happening.
Sure. Let's run it. But we've fixed this now, so we're not going to be able to see the problem.
Right, but I mean, we could just show here's the form, and this is what would happen before, and then we fix that. One, two, three, four. What kind of password is that?
There you go. All right, let's take the debugging off at the moment. Where is, come on, there they are, disable all. Okay, you want to walk us through this?
Well, yeah, so the idea is I fill in the first name, right, and then I fill in the last name, and then you don't have to do it, but if you click the save button, it would have stored the first name, but the updated information for the last name wouldn't be saved because you haven't tabbed off the field. And that binding happens when the element loses focus. And the tricky thing that you explained to me here is that those buttons at the bottom, those are action bar, what is it, action bar buttons?
App bar, application bar.
Okay. So those buttons are slightly different than other framework elements.
They're actually not framework elements. That's the key. Okay.
So they don't cause the framework elements to lose focus, and that doesn't cause the binding to update. So we kind of searched around, and we found that a workaround for this is to add a behavior or add a text changed event for the text boxes. Excuse me. To add a text changed event for the text boxes that would update the bindings whenever the text changes.
Right. So let's take a look at that, because that little bit of code needed to be added. Do you remember where?
That was, if you search for text changed. Yeah, that actually shows all three there. So you've got, there's the method, and that was, you can see the link to the blog post where somebody else ran into this exact same problem. And then we used a generic method so that we could call that same method from two different text boxes. And we found out we only really had two text boxes in the app that we cared about.
We only had two at all. That's right.
We care about each text box, all two of them.
All text boxes are created equal.
Yep.
But so then so what you're calling on the text box changed is this method text box changed.
Mm-hmm.
We test, although we know it's a text box, if sender is text box. And then this is the piece that you found, and this is, we want to give thanks to the website where we found this.
Yep.
This is coding with Bing, that is, put in the problem and out pops somebody's solution. And so we set the binding expression, and then we update the source. And that way, every time you type anything, each letter in the text box, it's rebound. And so we do not have to wait for it to lose focus.
Right.
And so the net of that, if we're still running, yes we are, is that you can now, even though I'm still in the last name here, I can hit mm-hmm. save, and it will in fact save both, which we can see by doing the quick search. And since we're here, let me show that now brings you back in here. So if we come in, this is one we've saved now, we can now come in and add to it, save it again, and if we do a search and come back, it takes you back and shows you the pieces you filled in and lets you change them or fill in additional pieces.
Nice. So one other thing on the phone that I thought would be interesting to point out was the error on save, there were a few other errors on save that were interesting. One was we just got this bizarre thing when you try and update a person, and it said, it was this error message, this long, ugly error message that said, the URI, blah, 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 is not valid for this operation. And, you know, it was one of those where it was a scary error message, but very easy to search for. And so when we search for it, I don't know if I have control here.
You do.
Okay, good. So if we look at this, there's this one of these, again, magic lines where we say use post tunneling equals true. And this actually, I searched on the error message. I found Julie Lehrman had posted on this just a few days before, and the idea is that WCF and REST services support all the rich HTTP verbs that are available, you know, put, update, delete, all that kind of stuff. And so in an ideal world, our client and our server would both talk all these verbs and everything would be beautiful from a, you know, purist RESTful perspective. However, since our server doesn't support that, we use post-tunneling. And what post-tunneling does is it appends headers that say, okay, server, if you don't support the put method, or I know you don't support the put method, so I'm posting this, but I wish I could put, you know, support a put. And then that, then the server says, okay, we, you know, we're both on the same page, and it does an update. So
that's great. So, and yeah. It does leave you with that feeling of, well, how would I ever know to do that? But once again, this was accomplished with a Bing search on the error that we ran into. So, in fact, finding this was pretty easy, given the power of that, the ability to search the internet for whoever has run into this problem before.
Exactly. I think that's one of the key things that I would tell any, you know, any beginning programmer is, if you get an error, don't say, I got an error, I don't know what to do. It's copy that error, delete out the parts of the error that have your specific file names, because nobody's going to, you know, use that exact same file name, and then search, and, you know, 8 times out of 10, there's your answer.
Actually, I'm finding when in the work that we've been doing on the full stack that it goes even beyond that, that when we run into conceptual errors, when we run into how would you even approach this, or what's the right way to do this, or what's the best practice, any number of questions are being answered first by searching with Bing rather than even going to the documentation first. I mean, sometimes that is the right thing, is the documentation, but often by doing the search first, we're getting an answer very quickly, and we're getting that answer across a myriad of sources.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's been a pretty powerful lesson about, and I think that's a fairly significant change in the way a developer would go about answering those kinds of questions, because for many years there was no documentation, but then for a good set of years you would go to the official documentation or you would go to MSDN. And while those are still absolutely great sources, it can be more efficient to just search for what you're looking for, put in a few keywords, and bang, somebody else has solved that problem.
Right. Yeah, I think
your enthusiasm is underwhelming, John.
No, true. What I was going to say is I think that now, especially because things move so quickly, that documentation just gets out of date faster than it can be reviewed and published, you know? And so in a lot of cases, you're better off finding somebody had this weird problem last week and they got this error message and this is what they did and we try it and it doesn't work. Or we look in the comments, you know, and says, I tried this, it didn't work, here's how I modified what you did.
Right.
You know?
And the search also turns up a good bit of the documentation, so it works out quite well.
So there's one other kind of interesting thing we ran into along the way here that I thought we'd point out, which was the assigning of client-assigned IDs. And we took kind of an interesting approach to this. We originally said, well, as we were saving these onto the server, we noticed that we kept every time we would save using our client-assigned ID was based on the number of items in our local dictionary.
Right, which is this dictionary here, people.
Right.
And when we were adding to by the count of the people in that dictionary is how we were assigning our local ID.
And, you know, we ran into one problem with that, which was, you know, something we could wave our hands and ignore, but was the idea that every time we ran the app, it doesn't save our isolated storage, and so it was getting a new, you know, it was always one. It was always the first person we added was always one. And then when we talked about it some more, we said, well, you know, this is not really good anyway, so we should be coming up with a better, unique way of assigning IDs. So what we ended up doing here was, and I kind of talked you into this, I think, but I think it actually turned out to be...
Twisted my arm is a more accurate way of saying it, but it is considerably better.
So step one was I said, well, we could use a GUID. And, you know, we could change this client-assigned ID. We need it to be unique. It can be assigned from multiple devices. Let's use a GUID. But there's several problems with GUIDs. One is they're really ugly, long, crazy formats. Two, the whole nullability thing with GUIDs is a pain. So we started doing our find replace, changing into GUID, and then we said, well, it needs to be nullable, and then it was just a nightmare. So what we ended up doing was we're converting the GUID to a long. So we're taking, you schooled me on this. This is a 128-bit GUID, and we're converting it down to a 64-bit long value. And so there could be collisions, although I think we both agreed that, you know, they're probably rare enough that it's not going to be.
Once in every three parallel universes, there'll be a...
Right, exactly. And they're definitely a lot more rare than what we're seeing with the int, which is constant. So at that point, really, it was just find, replace. And when we assign, I think here I can right-click on this. And, oops, I don't see
intel. References. Oh, you don't see it? I'll do it for you. Hold on. There you go. And you want to come down. Can you see on the bottom here?
Yep, I want this one. So when we're assigning, when we're creating a new person, we say if they don't have a local ID, assign them ID, and it's using a hash. It's basically like using a hash of a GUID. So at that point, that's their local client assigned ID. And what's nice is then every time we save them back up to the server, we can say I'm saving or updating a client, and this is their ID. And the server can say, oh, yeah, I've already got that. This is an update, which is neat.
Yeah, I think that's about where we're up to with this at the moment. It is working. The client is working. We are synchronizing with the server. And the next step is going to be managing the edits and updates from the client to the server.
Right. And there's some minor things. We mentioned, you know, that we've got the server kind of working on App Harbor, so I've made some updates there. We've got some very minimal things we've got remaining, but actually it's kind of shaping up. I think, you know, we took off to a quick start, and then we ran into all these crazy things once we tried to put all the pieces together, and now I think we're actually at a place where all the pieces are pretty much fitting together, which is nice.
And we're even beginning to think about what comes next. So that's
exactly.
Great. So for Microsoft, this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is John Galloway, and this is the Full Stack.